Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We are in the process of trying to reach our guest today, Lou Paradise, and I know he's busier than a one-armed paper hanger, and as soon as we have him online, we'll be bringing him to the forefront because we're going to be talking about something that is extremely important, and that is about pharmaceuticals. And I don't know about you, but there is a major problem that is in this country with addiction to painkillers. Yes, it's a big, big problem. And in fact, I have a friend that I was on the phone with just last night who has a member of their family that is battling this addiction in a very big way. So as soon as we are able to reach Lou Paradise, we'll be bringing him on the line. I wanted to share a thought with you by Charles Kendall Adams, and I think it's so important today that this is something that we become aware of. He said, it's a favorite belief of his that no student ever attains very eminent success by simply doing what is required of him. It is the amount and excellence of what is over and above the required that determines the greatness of ultimate distinction. Let me read that again. No student ever attains very eminent success by simply doing what is required of him or her. It is the amount of and excellence of what is over and above the required that determines the greatness of ultimate distinction. There is a man that I remember reading a book about. His name was Russell. This man was extremely accomplished. But when he was growing up, contrary to many attitudes of individuals today, that children should not work, they shouldn't have to work, that this isn't a requirement, in his generation, it was something that he found he had to do. If he wanted to go to school, if he wanted to do things, he had to have a job. He had to be able to work. And at the time, they had positions at hotels that the young men were called bellhops. And, goodness, this goes back into the early 1900s. And he said, when he got the job as a bellhop, he remembers after assisting people with their bags to their room at this resort that he happened to get a job with, that the person was so grateful for his help that they offered him a tip. And he just couldn't accept it. Now, how many people would take that attitude? Not many. Today's world? What's the likelihood of that happening? Pretty rare. But William Russell said for some reason, there was just something inside of him that said, you don't do this. You're being paid to do a job. It's wonderful that somebody wants to tip you, but he couldn't in good conscience take the tip. So because of this, he decided he was going to go off and just be by himself. He just couldn't understand his own behavior. Now, this is a young man. He's in his teens. And he said to himself, I'm going to do something different. I am not going to take a tip from anyone, and I am going to be the best bellhop that this hotel has ever seen. What possessed him to think that way? I don't know. But he got so excited about it because it was going to be contrary to what the typical attitude was. And he did become the very best bellhop at this hotel, and he was so enjoyed by the people that he ended up not accepting tips, but he was gifted with so many things. Opportunities to stay in people's homes, traveling with certain people. He was gifted all kinds of wonderful opportunities. He said there were times that he'd get up real early because there was a baby that someone had that maybe needed milk or extra attention, and he was right there. He gave above and beyond, and he had a wonderful time doing it. And do you know, he ended up making friends with people that lasted almost his entire lifetime. He took the time to really give the best of himself. And he said, it was important to me that I not judge it by money. And he was just given a tremendous amount in abundant ways that in a million years he never could have expected would have been that opportunity for him. So the reason I wanted to share this with you today is that I heard a statement on the news that was very, very distressing to me. And that is that there's a union organization that is approaching the farmers of this country, and they're trying to make it so that young people cannot work on the farms to help their families. They're saying they can't operate equipment, they can't do this, they can't do that, they can't do the other. I don't know about you, but I know of people that have been on farms, and the youngsters were right there side by side with their parents, and they were working. It was part of their life. They were very responsible people. 4-H clubs, where young people work, and they have a sense of pride in what they do. It's absolutely awesome. And when I think of people saying, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, and we wonder why so many students don't put their effort out, why should they? They don't have to work for it. They're entitled. I can't tell you how many teachers have gotten upset and have had conversations with me through the years saying, I don't enjoy a teacher because we're not allowed to teach. We've got all of these edicts and all of these different things that are, well, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't do the other. Young people grow because they have to have a standard of excellence to reach for. And that means that they're going to go through ups and downs. Can there be accidents? Yes. Can there be tears? Yes. But life is not fair. There is no such thing as perfection in life. And childhood is a way that you have to learn, hopefully, how you're going to cope with adulthood. It's a fascinating thing that I see happening here. And when I heard this news, I just was appalled. Absolutely appalled that there are people that are going to the farmers group. These are hardworking people. And they're going to them and saying, I'm sorry, but you can't have your kids do this. You can't have your kids do that. You can't have them do this, that, or the other. It's been done for thousands of years. It hasn't hurt them. And I know some of you may say, oh, but they shouldn't do this, they shouldn't do that. You learn by doing. And farm work is hard work. And it is just absolutely amazing to me how the people that are making these choices have absolutely no practical experience at all. They really don't. They haven't lived that life. They haven't had to deal with the issues the families have to deal with. But they're going to tell the families what they can do. And the kids, they're not supposed to do anything. So am I biased? Yes, I really am. And I'm very distressed. And I think when we take away the standard of excellence, when we take away the expectation for excellence, and when you hear news media promoting that this is supposed to be something that, wow, this is great, I don't agree with that at all. And I think we need to realize as adults, if we don't set a standard of excellence for ourselves, if we don't raise the bar so that we can go a little bit higher, how can we expect our youth to do any better? And I think that's something that the older generation, the mature generation, needs to keep in mind. They need to lead by example, not just by flapping their lips. And let the young people have a chance to do something with their lives. I listened to an interview today with a young man in his early 20s. He said the percentage of young people able to get work today is negligible. There just isn't the work. They're going to college. They've got these big student loans. They're willing to work. They can't find jobs. Well, what are we going to do to change that? We're going to have to be more innovative, and the young people are going to have to work maybe in places they hadn't anticipated working in. I remember meeting a graduate that had a master's in business. He was driving a van at a major hotel because he couldn't find work. You know what his attitude was? He said, I'm working. I still look. He said, I still love to learn. And that's what I'm going to do, because one day I am going to be in a situation where I can make a difference and maybe I'll have my own business. And I thought, wow, what a great attitude. And that's what we need to remember. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, we're still trying to reach Lou Paradise. I don't know. He's in New York City, and perhaps there is a challenge that's going on there. But regardless, as soon as he is available, we are going to be talking with him. So let me share something with you. And again, what we were going to be talking about today was the major problem that we are having in the United States with addiction to painkillers. So as soon as we're able to reach him, we'll be putting him on the air with me. Daniel Douglas Holm. Who is this man? Well, I found out about him through reading some material. And for those of you that have an interest in the unique, the unusual, the paranormal, that gratefully science is beginning to recognize is using natural law in many instances, Daniel was a man that really created a lot of challenges for people because he did what was not thought possible to do. Now, in 1955, during the month of April, he went home to Britain. He became a very, very well-known medium of the 19th and the 20th century. And I think that this man surprised people. Why did he surprise them? Because he could levitate. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've all heard the stories about the yogis that levitate and other people. Well, he was seen doing this by people, broad daylight, no strings, no wires, nothing else like this. And he would rise above the floor, and he would go up, sometimes touching the ceiling. And he had done this for well over 40 years. He had demonstrated this before crowds over and over and over again. Mark Twain and Napoleon III were individuals that were in his audiences through the years. Fraud? No, there was never fraud. Now, there was one occasion which really blew everybody's mind. The aristocracy, the English aristocracy, watched because he had laid out flat. His body was very, very rigid. And the windows were open in this room. And he levitated up, went out the window of this room, and re-entered the building to a window in the next room that was 8 feet away and 70 feet above the ground. Think that wouldn't get your attention? Mm-hmm. Well, he also was a trance medium, and he would go into an alternate state of mind, and he would talk with people on the other side. And they watched him do this one time when he was sitting in front of a fireplace. And there was a fire burning in the fireplace. Temperatures were cool. And when he was in this altered state, he would reach in and pick up burning coals. He sometimes would actually put his head in the fireplace. Live coals would be picked from his hair. Sometimes he put him up against his chest. No harm. None at all. And when he would hold a hot coal in his hand, extend it out to someone, they could feel the heat. They didn't know why he wasn't getting burned. Some people thought that the piece of coal that he was holding was a special piece, that part of it that was on his hand was cold and the other side was hot. So what he did, he had people cup their hands, he'd put the piece of coal in it, put his hand over the top of it, so that the hot part was completely covered. One thing occurred at one seance. 5 out of 7 people present could hold that piece of coal and not be burned. Now, the reason this story is so fascinating to me is that many years ago, I read a series of books that were written by a man, Max Freedom Long, and you can go and research this yourself. Max Freedom Long was a protege of Dr. Brigham Young, who Dr. Brigham had, there's a museum that's dedicated to him in Oahu, and he was a fascinating scientist. Well, Max had just graduated from college, and he ended up having the opportunity of meeting with Dr. Brigham when he was looking for an internship. Well, Dr. Brigham had worked with many, many people of the Hawaiian community. He knew old kahunas, and he had seen a lot of the things that they had done. And he was initiated as a kahuna when he walked across molten lava, and he didn't get burned. Now, the kahunas knew how to alter energy, and Dr. Brigham would say to Max, "I don't know how they do it, but they're using a natural law." He said, "I've seen it, I've experienced it, I don't understand it, but it works." And in his experience as a scientist, Dr. Brigham, when he was walking across this molten lava, the kahunas that he was with put certain leaves underneath his boots. Now, he had on real, real thick boots. They were barefoot. They put these leaves on the bottom of their feet, never got a blister. His boots melted. The soles of his boots melted on top of these leaves as he was walking across the molten lava. He said he couldn't understand it. It just blew him away, and the kahunas just left. Well, Max, after hearing the many stories by Dr. Brigham, decided that he was going to check it out. And he spent many, many years of research with those kahunas that were still left, because most of them had to go underground with their knowledge. And he started exploring himself. And his book, The Secret Science Behind Miracles, if you ever have a chance to get it, is something that makes for a very, very interesting read. But they knew how to work with energy. They knew how to alter the energy. They knew how to work with heat so that they were not burned. How many of you listening have walked across hot fire beds of coal? Well, the kahunas were doing that and more for a lot of generations, for hundreds of years. And maybe one day we'll be able to understand what it is that they were able to do. But levitation, believe it or not, I've got a neighbor. He was taught how to do it, and he's done it. And there was a particular procedure that you had to go through. I don't know what it is. I've never done it myself. But he said, "I actually did have the experience of levitating, and I was wide awake." So that's why I wanted to share this story with you, because I think sometimes we need to be aware that there are natural laws that just because we don't understand them does not mean they don't exist. They do. But there are disciplines that you have to understand, and if you're fortunate enough, like Dr. Brigham, or like the fellow that built the coral gardens, a wonderful place that to this day they haven't figured out how he was able to move tons of coral. He never allowed anybody around when he did the movement, but he used no special equipment. And there was a truck driver that observed him loading the truck, and he said the coral seemed to move all by itself. Fascinating. I love it. Well, I don't know what's happened to Lou. I hope that he is able to get through to us. I hope everything is all right. So we're going to open up the telephone lines to 888-627-6008. And if you want to give me your first name or initial, I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Einstein, he is quoted in so many, many ways. This is a man that even many years after he has left this experience, still influences the lives of so many people by much of his inspiration. Well, Jerome Weidman is a man who is very, very accomplished, and he had a special experience when he had the opportunity to meet Einstein. Now, Jerome Weidman is a novelist, a screenwriter, and he also won a Pulitzer Prize. He died in 1998, and this story about him and Einstein is just so touching because it shows how an individual, and you don't have to be famous to have this effect on someone else, but how someone who is open to communicating and open to listening to you can have a tremendous impact on you. It can just make all the difference in the world. Now, Jerome, he was tone deaf. At least, that's what he felt. And he said he never thought he could do very much with music. He just could not. And so whenever he would go to a concert of any kind, he would put plugs in his ears because he just said it was just a miserable experience for him. And after one concert, on this one occasion, he was pulling the earplugs out of his ears, and he heard this very soft, gentle voice ask him, "You're fond of Bach." Well, apparently that was the music that was being played. And he said, I didn't know very much about Bach. At the time, he said, I knew about as much about Bach as I knew nuclear fission, which was absolutely nada. But he said, here was this man sitting next to me with his funny hairdo, and I recognized him. It was Albert Einstein. And he just didn't know how to respond because immediately, just as what happens so often when you meet somebody that's very, very famous, you go, wow, what do I say? I just don't know what to say to this person. They're so famous. Well, he was honest. He said, I don't know anything about Bach, and I really have never heard his music. So Einstein was sort of surprised, and he said, you've never heard of Bach? And he said, no. He said, I'm tone deaf. I've never, ever really heard anybody's music. So Einstein did something that surprised Jerome. He invited him to go with him into another room. And he thought, I wonder what's happening here. Well, Einstein took him upstairs in this place where the concert had been going on. And Jerome found that he led him into this beautiful room, and it was a study. It was a library. So Einstein asked him, now that we have time with privacy because nobody's around us, I want to know, will you tell me why it is that you have felt this way about music? You don't want to listen to it. You just don't want to hear it. And he said, I don't know. Dr. Einstein, you really shouldn't worry about me. Go, you really should be with the people and listening to the concert. And he said, no. He said, have you ever listened to any kind of music? And he said, well, he said, I like songs that have words, something where I can follow the tune. So Einstein wanted to know what it was. Well, for Jerome, Bing Crosby was his favorite singer. And he said, good. And this is what Einstein did. He opened a phonograph machine. This is many years ago, and started pulling out records. He says, okay. He put on the phonograph a record by Bing Crosby, and he started playing it. Now, after he played it for a little bit, he lifted the needle off of the record, and he asked Jerome, he said, tell me what you've just heard. Well, he tried to sing the lines, and he said, of course, his voice cracked, and he said, see, you do have an ear. Now, what happened, he said, what you don't realize is you are able to hear, and you're able to hear music. He said, when you had your first arithmetic lesson in school, you had to learn how to work with numbers, didn't you? And he said, yeah. He said, okay. You would just, if you hadn't had a good teacher, you probably would have hated math. You wouldn't have been able to work with numbers at all because your mind would have been closed. If a teacher had told you to solve a problem, you didn't know how to do it. You'd say, I can't do it, and that would be it. So your whole life, you would have been denied the beauty of mathematics. However, a good teacher teaches you elementary things, and when you acquire the skill of that, then you move on to the bigger things. And it's the same thing with music. Now, let's go on to something more complicated. Einstein then goes and plays another piece, and he asks him to sing back what he had heard. Well, Jerome did. He sang back, and he said he was surprised. He was doing a lot better. And he said, this is wonderful. Einstein was having the time of his life. He was teaching a young man about the beauty of music. Einstein then plays a piece by Caruso. He asks Jerome to mimic him. He does it. Of course, he's not Caruso. But Einstein gave Jerome his total attention. And do you know what? By the time he was finished, Jerome was feeling so good about what he was doing. Then Einstein said, okay, now we're ready for Bach. I want you to listen. That's all I'm asking you to do. And he said, I recall how I sat beside this small, round man who had this unbelievable, untidy hair. He had a pipe clamped between his teeth, and his eyes were just radiant with joy and warmth at what he was seeing me accomplish. And when he finished listening to Bach, he applauded. Well, they end up joining the rest of the people down at the concert, and of course the hostess was very upset that Mr. Einstein had not been within the group and listening to the performance. And he said, you know what? I'm sorry I missed it too, but my young friend here, well, we were engaged in the greatest activity of which man is capable. Well, that perplexed the hostess. She wanted to know what it was. And he said, opening up yet another fragment of the frontier of beauty. Opening up yet another fragment of the frontier of beauty. One man taking time to introduce to a young person the joys of learning, the joy of hearing in a way that he didn't feel he was even capable of doing. We need to remember when we're around others, whenever we are sharing our knowledge and our wisdom, that we are having an impact. And that we can open up worlds for people just by having faith and confidence in them. Now, Jerome didn't become a Caruso, but he did become a playwright. And he also wrote the book for the musical I Can Get It For You Wholesale, which was Barbara Streisand's first Broadway appearance. It's an absolutely marvelous story. And I hope you've enjoyed it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, you'll be able to give me a buzz if you like, 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
PBSRadio.com. It's not mainstream. It could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth. PBSRadio.com.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I have got an absolutely sumptuous recipe here, and I wanted to share it with you today. By the way, give me a call if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. This is a recipe by Connie Banstra. Now, Connie is just an absolutely awesome lady, and food is a really, really special thing in her life, as it is with all of us, but she loves recipes that she can serve to people that are really delicious and memorable. Well, I don't know about you, but being from an Italian background, manicotti is a wonderful, wonderful dish, and everybody has their own version of how they like to fix it. And this is a recipe that just about everybody loves. So if you've got your pad of paper and pen handy, give me just a minute because I want to let you know, I want to remind you that my new show time is going to be on May the 1st. I'm going to be broadcasting at 9 in the morning Pacific, 9 to 10, right here on bbsradio.com. So I would absolutely be delighted if you could join me at an earlier time, and wherever you are in the country, just make that adjustment. Also, I'm flying to New York City tomorrow. On Friday, I'm going to be appearing at the National Publicity Summit, interviewing about 100 people, and that is something I always look forward to. And, of course, I'm also going to have a little bit of time in New York where I'm going to be available for in-person private sessions. So if you would like to meet with me while I'm in New York, give me a call at 253-582-5604. Yes, even though I'm in another state, in another city, traveling and doing business, you can always reach me by phone. That's the quickest way of doing that. Leave a message, and I'll get back to you promptly. And for those of you up in Alaska, I am going to be in Alaska May the 2nd through the 7th. I'll be in Fairbanks the 2nd and 3rd, Anchorage for the rest of the time, the evening of the 3rd, all the way through the 7th. And again, if you want to reach me for a private session, the number to call is 253-582-5604. Okay, let's do it. I mean, if you like manicotti, this is going to be a wonderful recipe. Now, this is what you need. You need a large onion. These are the ingredients. One large onion chopped, You're going to need one garlic clove minced. You need 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of Italian seasonings, 2.5 teaspoons of salt, 1 teaspoon of sugar, 4 8-ounces of tomato sauce, 1 can of Italian tomatoes, 1 package of your favorite manicotti noodles. You need 1 pound of ground beef, or if you like, you can use shredded beef, but you want to use a very tender cut. You're going to need 1 pound regardless. You need 1/2 cup of walnuts, and you want to chop those up. You're going to need 2 eggs. And they need to be at room temperature. Actually, all of your ingredients should be at room temperature. You need 1 package of spinach, and I'd recommend the frozen, the chopped spinach. And that should be thawed, and then you want to drain it. And you want to make sure it's as dry as possible, so you can put it either in a double layer of paper towels and just, you know, wring the water out of it. Or you could use a regular dish towel if you want to, so that you get as much moisture out of that frozen spinach as possible. You're going to need 1.5 cups of cream-style cottage cheese, 1 package of cream cheese, and 1 package of mozzarella cheese, 8 ounces, and you can get it pre-sliced, or you can slice it yourself, you know, if you like getting the mozzarella ball. Mm-hmm. Now, this is how simple it is. Your manicotti noodles, what you want to do, you want to boil, put them in a pot of hot boiling water, and the water should be salted. And you want to be sure that you cook them not until they're real soft, but whatever the directions say, but they need to be undercooked, basically, because they're going to be baking with all of these ingredients stuffed inside of them. So they're going to continue to cook. So what you want to do is lift them out carefully after they've cooked for the amount of time needed and put them into a pan of cold water until you're ready to fill them. So you do the manicotti. You don't try to put too many into the pot, where they get really, really crowded and they might break when you go to reach for them. So just do whatever you need to do there. And then in a saucepan, about medium size, you want to saute your onion and garlic in the butter until your onion is nice and soft. You don't want it to be brown. You just want it nice and soft. Then you stir in your seasoning, 1 teaspoon of the salt, the sugar, the tomato sauce, tomatoes, and you just let it simmer. Just let it simmer there until it starts to really get that wonderful fragrant aroma, and it's thickening up for you. And while that's doing its work, you're in a medium skillet. You're going to take your beef. You're going to saute it until it's lightly browned. You want to add to that mixture your walnuts, 1 of your eggs, and 1/2 of your drained spinach, and you want to add 1 teaspoon of the salt. You want to mix that all together quickly. Then you want to blend your cottage cheese with your cream cheese. And a good way to do that is with a portable mixer, or, you know, if you had a regular mixer, just stick it inside the bowl and just let it whip for a couple of minutes. And then you take the remaining 1/2 teaspoon of salt, the other egg, and spinach, and you blend that all together real quickly. You could do this in a Cuisinart if you wanted to. And then that's all ready to go. So now you're prepared to work with your noodles that have been cooling in the ice water. You want to take the noodles out of the water. You want to make sure you drain them well, either on regular towels or on your paper towels. You're going to take and fill 1/2 of your noodles with the meat mixture and 1/2 of the noodles with the cheese mixture. And the best way to do this is with a long-handled teaspoon. And then you're going to take your tomato sauce after you've stuffed all of your manicotti. You're going to take your hot tomato sauce that's been simmering on the stove and getting nice and thick, and your baking dish that you put it in, which needs to be a 1-level baking dish. What you're going to do is put your noodles, you know, put 2 cups of the sauce right in the bottom of that baking dish, and take your filled noodles and put them right on top of the sauce, spoon the remaining sauce over it, and you want to cover it with foil, and you want to bake at 350 for 30 minutes. Then you want to take your mozzarella slices. You take the dish out of the other oven. And depending on how big your manicotti noodles are, it can be, you know, a 9 by 13 baking dish should do nicely for this. And then you want to take, when it's cooked for a half hour at 350, then you want to remove the cover after you've taken the dish out of the oven, put your mozzarella over the top, and you want to make sure that the cheese overlaps. So then you bake it an additional 10 minutes longer until the cheese melts. And if you want to get that golden brown, turn on the broiler for just a little bit of time. Stick the dish under there, and that mozzarella will get a beautiful golden brown color to it. This is such a good recipe. And if you have vegetarians, then you have noodles that are filled with a cheese mixture. If you have people that don't care, then both will be fine. But sometimes when we're serving meals and we have a vegetarian that's attending, we wonder, what are we going to do? Well, this is a recipe that takes care of just about everybody. And if you liked, you probably could substitute chicken. It would have a different texture and taste to it. But you would be able to do that. You could also use sausage instead of your beef, like an Italian sausage, just making sure you sauteed it well and broke it up into smaller pieces. This is a recipe that you can have a lot of fun with and that everybody's going to like. You serve it with hot, crispy bread and got abundant butter, maybe some delicious marmalade that goes with it, your favorite, and a nice salad and wine. You have got a fabulous meal and a light dessert, and you've got it made. And everybody goes away happy. Kids love this. Adults love this. It is really, really good. Donna Siebel here. I've got open lines, 888-627-6008 is the number for you to call into if you would be inclined to do so. And I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me about anything that is of interest to you. 888-627-6008. On Friday, we are going to be stepping back in time. We're going to be talking about entrepreneurship on a major level. This is going to be an interview with Gregory Crouch, and this is a man that was inspired to write about the history of early aviation and how the United States was strongly aligned with China in that industry in a most unusual way, an American. His name was Bond, wasn't James, but you'll find out more on Friday when we do the interview. And tomorrow, we're going to be doing a best of Donna. Mary Faulkner, who was a guest on the show, we're going to be talking about women's spirituality, their power, and grace. That's what you're going to be hearing a replay of tomorrow. So if you missed the show originally when it was on the air, I think you will enjoy hearing Mary. She's just absolutely delightful. Landmines. Would you believe that a rat is an effective patrol scout to find them? Well, after we come back from break, you're going to find out more about these critters that normally most of us would just cringe at even coming in contact with and how they can save lives. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. If you're like me, if any rat happens to be running around in your neighborhood and you spy it, the first thing you go is, ah, yuck. Well, rats have a notorious reputation. Why? Well, the bubonic plague is one reason. But they are prolific breeders. Rats are extremely intelligent creatures, but oh my goodness, they believe in having babies, and they can have a litter, I believe, about every 6 weeks. I might be wrong. If any of you know better than me, then be sure to let me know, educate me more. But they're just prolific. Well, one of the reasons that their species is so prolific is that it's a significant part of the food chain. We have hawks here in the Pacific Northwest. We have eagles. We have coyotes. We have all kinds of critters that just love to have these little rodents as part of their meal. It is something that enables them to stay alive, and it's such is the story of nature. Well, in Belgium, there is an anti-landmine organization that uses an African giant pouched rat. I've never heard of this kind of rat. There's all kinds of species. They train these rats to actually sniff out deadly landmines in Mozambique and Tanzania. Now, we probably would never have the occasion to need something like this, but if you think of places that have undergone tremendous, tremendous war environments, and landmines are just devastating. To this day, we have people that have their legs blown off, especially children. They're out playing, and they don't know that they're there, and maybe they were put there 40 years ago, and by 50 years ago, 70 years ago, and if the stuff is still active, it explodes with the right pressure. Well, the reason they train these rats is because the rats are so lightweight, the likelihood of them actually setting off a bomb is extremely remote. Even when they scratch to indicate that a bomb is right underneath their feet. These super rats, as they call them, have been trained with food, but they found something else about these rats, that they can smell the life-threatening disease tuberculosis, and they have tested them, and they can analyze. They respond to TB so fast, it's 50 times quicker than a lab scientist. We've learned about training dogs to smell different types of cancers. We have found that even cats are able to discern certain things. Who would have imagined that they would have discovered this with rats? It's amazing stuff. Think of the lives that it could save. Although that's something that may not be particularly appealing to people, but this picture of this amazing rat that is trained to go after landmines is a phenomenal photograph. They've got a photograph of him. He's actually on top of a mine. He scratched away the earth so it could be seen, And he's right there, and they're able to remove it because he found it. Absolutely amazing. I just think it's incredible what people are coming up with using creatures like a rat that we otherwise would probably kill, not realizing that it can serve a valuable purpose. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. Do you have lottery in your state or in your country, wherever you're listening in from? I found out that in Connecticut, there is a fellow by the name of Clarence Jackson. And he was considered, or is considered, the lottery's biggest loser. I know you always want to hear about the winners. Well, he was a winner, but he ended up being the biggest loser. Now, how did this happen? Well, it was in October of 1995 when his lotto ticket won. He and his family won $5.8 million, but they didn't know they had won it. In fact, they didn't find out until 15 minutes before the one-year deadline to claim the prize. There had been all kinds of ads run. They were trying to find who the winner was. Now, he was 23 years old at the time that this happened. He didn't make it in time, and the lottery officials rejected his claim. Now, in 1997, the Connecticut House of Representatives voted to award him the prize, but the state Senate refused to go along. So he was battling still up until 2004, trying to say, I was the winner, please. I couldn't get there because my dad's business, my dad was ill, and I had to take care of this business. Well, they didn't buy it. So he never, ever has been able, to the best of my knowledge, to recoup it. But there was another Jackson that had won a lottery. Now, he is a man. His name is Andrew Jackson, Jack Whitaker. Now, he was already a wealthy man. When he won the multi-state Powerball lottery in December 2002, he became the biggest single lottery winner in history after snagging a $314.9 million jackpot. However, it seemed to bring him a lot more problems than he would have ever imagined. He decided he wanted to collect his winnings in a $170.5 million lump sum. Now, he won $314.9 million, so all of the rest of that, above and beyond the $170.5 million, was going in taxes and other things. He didn't want to take payments over 20 years, but that was okay. He got it. But do you know what? He ended up being robbed three times. One time, they robbed him of $500,000. He was also sued for assault, arrested multiple times for drunk driving, and got booked for getting into a bar fight. Sometimes you wonder. I mean, he had more money than he could ever use in a lifetime. And just, it's amazing what people do with their lives. It's incredible. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'll be talking with you live on Friday. I'm going to be in the Big Apple tomorrow. I'm going to be on my way flying. I look forward to being in that fabulous city. And I look forward to being with you live, talking about China and the history of aviation with the United States on Friday. China's Wings. We'll be talking about it then. Talk to you on Friday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.